Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, ever since man has started gazing into the heavens, he's always wondered, is there intelligent life out there? Are we alone in the universe? Perplexing thoughts and questions. In a moment, a debate between Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute and Stanton Friedman, father of modern-day ufology. We're going to talk about the possibility of life out there in the universe and whether that life has indeed come here to planet Earth. I shall present to you our guests in alphabetical order. Stanton Friedman received his Bachelor of Science and his Master's of Science degrees in physics from the University of Chicago. He worked for 14 years as a nuclear physicist on advanced, highly classified, eventually canceled projects such as nuclear aircraft, fission and fusion rockets, and nuclear power plants for space. Stan is the original civilian investigator of the Roswell incident, who co-authored Crash at Corona and instigated the Unsolved Mysteries Roswell Project. He was heavily involved in both the 1979 documentary UFOs Are Real and the 1993 and 1996 videos Flying Saucers Are Real. Stan has provided testimony to congressional hearings, appeared twice at the United Nations, and pioneered many aspects of ufology, including the Betty Hill Star Map work, Crashed Saucers, an analysis of the Delphos physical trace case. And when I was a young puppy at the age of 21, he was my very first radio interview. Stanton, welcome to Coast tonight. How
glad
are you?
Glad to be on again, George. Makes me feel old, but what the heck?
Good to have you. And, of course, Seth Shostak is an astronomer involved with Project Phoenix. He's got a Bachelor of Arts degree in physics from Princeton and a Ph.D. in astronomy from Caltech. He is responsible for much of the outreach activities of the Institute. He edits the newsletter, gives talks, and writes magazine articles and books about SETI. In addition, he teaches a half a dozen informal education classes on astronomy and other topics in the Bay Area. Before coming to SETI, Seth did research work on galaxies using radio telescopes at observatories and universities in America and Europe. His avocations include photography, filmmaking, electronics. Seth has produced a series of lectures on tape and video on the subject of SETI and is a regular contributor as well to Coast AM. Seth, welcome back, and how are you feeling now? That was quite a bout you had a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
It was indeed, George, and I apologize that I wasn't able to do the show, but I'm, as you can hear, if not articulate, at least voluble.
you are back. I guess with both of you, we don't have ground rules because you're both gentlemen, you're both good at what you do. So what I'd like to do is just start by just getting a little statement from each of you about your own specific beliefs. Then we'll get into a Q&A, and then I'm going to kind of open it up a little bit more for you, Stanton and Seth, where you can do a little by-play back and forth along with the Q&A, okay?
Sure.
And the last hour, we'll just open it up to phone calls from coast-to-coast listeners, and they can address calls to either one of you. So you, Mr. Friedman, as we go in alphabetical order, give me a little statement on just your thoughts of tonight's topic at hand, and that is the belief of UFOs.
Well, I'm convinced after, since 46 years of study and investigation, that the evidence is overwhelming that planet Earth is being visited by intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft. In other words, some, underlined about 18 times, some UFOs are alien spacecraft. Two, we're dealing with a kind of cosmic Watergate meaning some few people within major governments have known since July 1947 at least, that some UFOs are alien spacecraft because of the recovery of two crash flying saucers and alien bodies in New Mexico. Three, that none of the arguments made against the first two conclusions stand up under careful scrutiny. And finally, four, we're dealing with the biggest story of the millennium, that is, visits to planet Earth, successful cover-up of the best data, bodies, and wreckage for 57 years. Now, when it comes to ufology versus, I was going to say setiology, but I don't think there is such a word. I think that there are a lot of good scientists with a strong interest in SETI. Unfortunately, I believe that the SETI program is based on a number of assumptions having no basis in fact. And assuming, for example, that there's nobody coming here, that radio is the ultimate means of communication, that if aliens were coming here, they would know about it, that there is no colonization, no migration, that we need to talk about great distances before there's anybody out there, and that we can't possibly be a threat to anybody out there. They also assume that there's no national security aspect to the notion of alien visitations, despite the fact that obviously every military group in the world would love to get their hands on something with the capabilities of flying saucers. So there's a clear and definite difference. They ignore the UFO data. We ufologists look at the SETI data and we say, hey, where's your evidence? They want us to provide a body. We want them to provide any kind of evidence that there's anybody out there sending signals. I'm not saying there isn't. I think there is loads of creatures, I'll say, beings out there. I don't think we're really worth talking to as equals, partly because people tend to neglect the time factor here. We have had civilization thousands of years, but the planet's been suitable for intelligent life, for a billion years. We don't know how many civilizations have come and gone, what the past history of our own planet is, and for all we know, some of the nearby stars, I'm only interested in the local neighborhood, small town guy, you know, within 54 light years, 1,000 stars, of which about 46 are similar to the sun. Within that small distance, there are stars that are a billion years older than the sun. The notion that they're stuck at either chemical rocket productions or radio for communication is, to me, silly.
Okay, Seth, let's get your take on the possibility of life in the universe and in UFO visitation.
Well, let me just, I'll try and be succinct here, George. Let me just say that, to begin with, Stanton and I actually do agree on one premise here, which underlies the whole discussion, and that is the possibility that there may be other intelligent life in the galaxy. Obviously, Stanton believes that. In fact, he thinks they're buzzing the countryside. I agree that that intelligent life is not such a rare phenomenon that we would never find evidence of it in our neighborhood. I think that it's a frequent enough phenomenon that we can and that we will. I think where we disagree is first on many of the things that Stan said about the SETI program. I hope that we'll get into this. I hope that it won't become a debate between me and Stanton about, for example, Roswell, because as Stanton would be very quick to point out, I am not an investigator of ufology, as you call it. That's not my bag. I'm an astronomer. And we're doing an experiment to try and prove that we have some cosmic company, if you will. I would say right off, we have not found that evidence. And I think that's an important difference between me and Stanton, because while he's claiming that he has found the evidence and they're here, which, as he has said, would be an incredibly important discovery, I don't find that evidence terribly compelling, and I'm eager to hear exactly how compelling it is. We don't make that claim, but if we do find something, I don't think that it's going to be like these claims of the ufologists that were being visited. I think it's going to be a claim that can be verified by many, many people in many different ways, and that there will be no doubt that we have found something interesting.
Well, what I find fascinating, though, about both of you is that you do agree on the fact that there could be, and there probably is, intelligent extraterrestrial life out there, because there are some who would not agree with either one of you that there's any life out there at all. Stanton?
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. And the question, of course, boils down, and Seth has talked about this, about are we unique or not? Is there anything so special about us that it couldn't have happened anyplace else, not only in the local neighborhood, but in the whole darn galaxy? And I don't worry about other galaxies. I'd like to use, I wish people would forget the word intergalactic. I'd much prefer intragalactic. So, yeah, there are people like that. And I find, in all my lecturing, I find that you've got your bell-shaped curve. You've got the extremists at both ends of the spectrum who say, I'm absolutely sure there is no life out there. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. There can't be any other life besides here. And there's certain religious groups that take that attitude. There's the other extremists who say, don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. They're here to save me. And I don't try to aim at either one of those groups, and I know that Seth doesn't. So it's the healthy agnostics in between. There will always be extremists on any subject you can name. And neither one of us, I think, is concerned with those people. There's not much you can do with them. If they say, don't bother me with the facts, my mind's made up, what follows has nothing to do with science.
When I first met you, Stanton, I was in Detroit as a reporter. You were going to universities talking about UFO visitations. It was 1971. You were at Oakland University, which was in Oakland County, just a little north of Detroit. Now, that was 1971. Roswell, of course, happened in 1947. Was it the Roswell case that got you interested in UFOs, or was there something else there in between?
Oh, not at all. I didn't start into Roswell until late in the 70s. I read a lot of one book in particular, The Air Force Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. That was back in 1958 when I was working on a very far-out program, nuclear aircraft. That led to me reading 15 other books, led to visits to Project Blue Book, to a discovery of Project Blue Book Special Report 14 with an enormous amount of data and clear proof that the Air Force was lying through its teeth about the data that they had obtained for Blue Book. So before I got into Roswell heavily, which was 1978, and it didn't figure at all in my early stuff, it's
right.
Mentioned once in Frank Edwards' book, half a page, Flying Saucers, Serious Business, but he got all the facts wrong anyway. So, no, Roswell was at the end of a long period of serious communication investigation. Wasn't the beginning at all. Unfortunately, I still seem to be stuck. I was there 10 days ago in Roswell. But no, it was not the beginning. In retrospect, it was an extraordinarily important event because it set the tone for 57 years of misrepresentation, cover-up, etc.
Make sure you remind me, Stanton, because someone told me that you were handed a piece of metal or something from while you were in Roswell, and I want to get into that with you later just to tell me if...
Okay, I will talk about that.
Okay. Seth, how about you? I mean, here you are. You are an astronomer, your PhD from Caltech. At what point did you decide in your career, I'm going to join SETI, and I'm going to be part of this search for extraterrestrial intelligence?
Well, that's kind of a personal history. It's a very diffuse one in a sense. But I, of course, even as a kid, I was interested in the idea of extraterrestrial life. I think most young people are today, perhaps more so than even then. And when I was interested, of course, that was before the Civil War, I think. But in any case, when I was a graduate student, actually, and using radio telescopes to study galaxies, a book had come out. It appeared. It was a book by Carl Sagan and a Russian physicist by the name of Joseph Shlosky called Intelligent Life in the Universe. And it discussed sort of a scientific approach to the possibility of the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence and how you might find it. Okay. And I was reading this very late one night at the radio observatory. It was 3 in the morning. I actually have a picture of this because at 3 in the morning there was nobody else there and you get kind of bored and I would make self-portraits of myself with my camera. So I have a picture of myself reading this book. But in any case, what occurred to me was that the very instruments that I was using to study galaxies could be used for interstellar communication. Right. Now, that was just an engineering consideration, but that was a very exciting thought. That was, if you will, even a romantic thought. And so I got interested in it then. I actually joined the SETI Institute only when I moved to the Bay Area, and that was about 1990, actually.
Okay, and by the way, those of you listening, and you have the ability via computer and FastBlast, in our last hour during the phone calls with Stanton and Seth, I'm going to open up your decision-making as the judge, and you're going to fast-blast me with who you think might have won part of this debate. And, you know, in theory, there are no winners or losers, but I do want to get your impressions. So as you listen, and when I announce that toward the last hour, fast-blast me, and I'll add them all up by hand, and I'll try to get the results by the end of the hour. Stanton and Seth, let's chat between you two for just a moment, if we can. We're coming up to the break in about 4 minutes. Seth, why do you not believe? I mean, here you are out there listening for sounds and signals from intelligent life. Why can't you believe the fact that maybe we've been visited by these same people?
Well, actually, I could believe it. That actually isn't the issue. I could believe it. I could believe it. And if someone were to suggest, well, you know, Earth has been giving off a signal that there's life here for 2 billion years, which it has, because there's been a lot of oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere for something like 2 billion years, and that could be detected by essentially anybody in the galaxy, right, with a big enough telescope and the right equipment. And maybe they sent an expedition, you know, 100 million years ago to visit the Earth and found a few dinosaurs and, who knows, stuffed them into sample jars or whatever, took some of their DNA, made a few photos and left. I mean, of course that's possible. That's possible, right? Interstellar travel is not impossible. Doesn't violate physics. Could have been done. But on the other hand, yeah, that would be very difficult to prove. Now, if you're going to make the claim that, well, now, wait a minute, they've not only, they have visited us in modern times, actually within our lifetimes, they've done that. Well, that's a very interesting claim. But if they've done that within our lifetime, then there must be some evidence. There must be some compelling evidence. And I honestly do not believe that that evidence is very compelling. And in fact, in that opinion, I seem to be on the side of, well, let's say, for example, science museums. If you go to your local science museum, they don't have too much on alien visitation, even though everybody would be terribly interested in that. Now, why is it that they don't have that? Well, what are they going to show? What is the evidence? And that's where I get hung up, because if you're going to say that they're here, doggone it, that evidence ought to be fairly irrefutable.
It is.
Well, I think it is refutable. In fact, it's to me like the Indians of North America having some doubts in 1492 that European ships were visiting our continent. They didn't have those doubts. The Spaniards didn't sail back and forth 3 miles offshore for 57 years teasing the Indians. The Indians knew that they were here.
Well, the evidence is indeed absent, if you will, from the books on SETI. There's no question. And I would agree with you that most museums don't carry any evidence about flying saucers. Part of the problem, of course, is the laughter curtain, the fear of ridicule that keeps scientists from wanting to get involved.
No, Stanton. This is the most interesting thing that could be discovered. Fear of
ridicule
just doesn't fly. I don't buy that.
Well, I have talked to many scientists who say, you can't use my name. I wouldn't dare to let my name used if I were to handle a sample like we briefly touched on. We'll talk about more later.
Sure.
But beyond that, look at the references at the back of your books, at Carl Sagan's books, at Drank's books. There's no indication they've looked at any of the large-scale scientific studies. In Demon Haunted World, Carl Sagan's last real book, his main source of information about UFOs, and he touches on the subject throughout, and I deal with this in a chapter in my book, Top Secret Magic, M-A-J-I-C, his main source of information seems to be Weekly World News. He doesn't talk about Project Blue Book Special Report 14, a large-scale scientific study done by Battelle Memorial Institute. It's as if it didn't exist, and it was under Air Force contract, not ufology contracts, if you will. People talk about the Condon Report. You do in your, not the current book, Cosmic Country. Is that right?
Yep. That's the name of it. Exactly.
Yeah. In your previous book, you mentioned the Condon Report, but you don't mention that a special UFO subcommittee of the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics says one could come to the opposite conclusions on the basis of the data in the report from those of Dr. Condon. Any phenomena with 30% unexplained cases is certainly worthy of further study.
Stay with us, Stanton and Seth Shostak, Stanton Friedman. And when we come back, we're going to kind of sit in on their table discussion here, our debate. Perhaps it's like joining them with a cup of coffee, or in my case, a glass of iced tea. and we'll sit down and we'll listen to Stanton and Seth talk about the possibility of UFOs, visitations, and life in outer space. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Hey, do you believe in urban legends? That's what the August issue of the After Dark is all about, and some other fascinating topics as well. If you'd like to subscribe and get 14 issues for the price of 12, call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. By the way, as we continue with our debate tonight with Seth Shostak and Stanton Friedman, I just want to remind you both that they have websites. They are linked to their names right up there at coasttocoastam.com. Read the websites, check on some of the things that they have written. Seth, for example, has written a couple books, Sharing the Universe, Life in the Universe, Cosmic Company. Stanton, of course, has a book, Crash at Corona, UFOs, The Real Story. It's a CD-ROM and a video called Flying Saucers Real. A little bit later on, if you have a paper and pen or pencil, we're going to give you some special numbers too. If you'd like some information on how to order the books, where to find them, I think you'll find them very fascinating. And welcome back to Coast, our UFO debate. I'm George Norrie, along with Stanton Friedman and Seth Shostak, our very special guests. By the way, thanks to both of you for having the guts to debate each other and to talk and have the dialogue here. A lot of guests would shy away from going at it with another, and it's good to have you both on.
Thanks. We should mention that Seth and I met each other on the Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, really?
Each listened to the other's lectures. So we had a chance to, you know, find out something about the other person and realize we're not ogres, we don't have horns on the head.
Well, first of all, you're both good people, and I think what is really exciting is you both believe in extraterrestrial life. It's just the difference on if it's here or not.
And I wasn't able to finish with the bottom of the hour there, but two areas. Seth, in his latest book, Cosmic Company, says how come they haven't landed and why aren't they seen on radar, when in fact Ted Phillips in Missouri has, over the last, 35 years, collected more than 5,000 landing trace cases. These are not crop circles, let me immediately state that, from 75 countries. So they have landed often and in a lot of different places. And he doesn't talk, it's as if the radar cases didn't exist, but the multiple witness radar visual sightings, such as those investigated by Dr. James E. McDonald, the professor of physics, upper atmosphere was his bag, at the University of Arizona. The multiple witness radar visual sightings are some of the most exciting ones, because you got guys on the ground, guys in the sky, radar on the ground, radar in the sky, and behavior that clearly indicates manufactured objects behaving in ways that the things we can manufacture can't duplicate. Therefore, they were made someplace else. That's important evidence, and it's part of the cosmic Watergate business in the sense that the government certainly doesn't like talking about the military cases. So if we're going to talk about there is no evidence, we have to say, except for all that stuff I haven't looked at, which is my biggest objection, my noisiest objection, if you will, to many of the claims by the SETI people about UFOs. They don't refer to the evidence. It's as if it didn't exist. It reminds me of the four basic rules for debunking. This applies to anything, George. Your other guests can use it in other areas. But what the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. If you can't attack the data, attack the people. And do your research by proclamation. Carl Sagan did the same thing. He talked about there are interesting sightings that aren't reliable, which is certainly true. There are reliable sightings that aren't interesting, which is also true. But then he says there are no interesting and reliable sightings, which is clearly false if you look at the data in the Air Force's biggest study. So let's go back to that evidence. And, you know, one thing that bothers a lot of people is this question of why would aliens come here? And there are many different versions of, you know, why would all the basket makers in the neighborhood come to Earth, mm-hmm. and things like that. But Seth, as an astronomer, knows that there is something special happening here. For everybody in the neighborhood, soon Earthlings will be leaving if we don't destroy ourselves first. And I'm not laying odds either way on that one.
Right, yeah.
But if you were in the local neighborhood, you'd be concerned about this primitive society whose major activity was tribal warfare. When you look at the progress we've made, progress in quotes, in the past 100 years in technology, Seth knows that his radio telescopes are how much better now than they were 40 years ago in terms of how many different channels can be looked at the same time, you know, the speed of computation, all this sort of thing, incredible improvement. So I would think everybody would be concerned about making sure we don't go out there with our brand of friendship, which is hostility. And I don't worry about long. Seth, in his book, not the last one, but the one before, says it's very unlikely that they'll be within, that our neighbors, if you will be within hundreds of light years. How can you say unlikely unless you got a catalog of where everybody is? It's not a scientific statement. It has no basis. It's a proclamation.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Seth, I'm going to sit back a little bit, sit at the table. Stanton, by the way, is the one with the beard. Seth is the other one on the right-hand side of the table. And, Seth, I want you and Stanton just to chat a little bit, and we're just going to kind of listen in on both of you, if that's okay.
All right. Well, let me try this. Stanton has brought up about 12 different points there. And I'd like to address actually what I think is the crux of the matter when it comes to the matter of visitation, because that is, after all, Stanton's bag. Okay, he's convinced they're visiting, and I think that's great, because I think that if that's true, then Stanton's in line for a Nobel Prize.
Why?
And I think that because he claims that it's so, and not many other people do. With a master in physics degree, it's rather hard. And so what I want to ask him, and all the rest of the stuff about how close they might be, we'll get back to that if you want,
okay.
Stanton, because I don't think they know we're here. And as far as our aggressive behavior, we always like to talk about our aggressive behavior. In 100 years, we'll still be talking about our aggressive behavior. It's not clear to me that any of that may or may not interest the aliens. I think that's a very self-centered point of view. We always like to think that we're the most important generation. But let me get back to this, because if you talk about the possibility that we're being visited today, or 57 years ago, whatever, and you ask a scientist that, most scientists, and in particular I asked a British astrophysicist once, and what he said to me was this. He said, look, Seth, if I thought that there was a 1% chance that that was true, I would spend 100% of my time working on it, and he isn't. Now, what I would put to Stanton is this. Give me your best case. Don't quote these old reports from, you know, many years ago. I'm glad that they're out there. And, in fact, none of them seems to have convinced the scientific community, so that suggests that something's missing in those reports, and the reports aren't being made today. It doesn't seem. You don't have big teams of academics that are writing big reports. So my question to you is, look, bottom line, tell me the best evidence you have that we're being visited today.
Seth, you just said something that's quite extraordinary. Because the academic community isn't looking at it, that means it doesn't exist.
No.
1% probability? How many of the people who make those claims have studied any of the evidence? I don't mean the tabloid stuff now.
I don't think tabloids
are not a good source of information on any subject.
But they don't all have to study it for it to become accepted as
there
true.
There have been a dozen PhD theses done. I give credit to those professors who did.
Answer my question. What's the best evidence? Give me your best evidence.
The best evidence is the cumulative effort of lots and lots of people, the Condon Report, Project Blue Book Special Report 14, the congressional testimony of a dozen scientists, including Carl Sagan, incidentally, the book UFO Evidence by Richard Hall, which has hundreds of good cases. Look, you see, events, if you will, in the same bag as astrophysical theory or practice. We're talking about behavior involving intelligence. We're not talking about reproducible laboratory situations. We're talking about something much close to, let's say, murder, automobile accidents, aircraft crashes, where you can't reproduce, where you have to study after the fact. And that's what we have to do with flying saucers. No, I can't bring an alien into the laboratory. Sure wish I could. We wouldn't be having this discussion.
Can you bring a saucer into the laboratory?
What?
You've said there have been thousands of landings.
Yes, and I have done laboratory testing on soil affected by flying saucers.
What about the saucers? What are the best pictures of a landed saucer?
I don't have any pictures of landed saucers. I've got lots of pictures.
There have been thousands of landings, and nobody thought to take a picture?
I've talked to a cop who was standing outside his vehicle in Northern California. Saucer went right over the vehicle, and he told me very sheepishly, he said, look, I always have a camera in the car, you know, because of accidents and things like that. All I was concerned with is, what the heck is this thing doing? After it went by, why didn't I take a picture? Now, we have plenty of pictures at a more reasonable distance where there's no, let's say, immediate threat. There are gun camera pictures. There's some at the National Archives. We have the kind of evidence that you'd expect if you're dealing with intelligently controlled craft doing things under their control. They're not landing in the middle of, let's say, Yankee Stadium. I'm a Dodger fan. Let's say Los Angeles, the Dodger Stadium, so that everybody can watch and yell, get your cameras ready, guys. Here they come. That's not the kind of thing we're dealing with. That's why astronomers, in many ways, are much less well-equipped than police officers to deal with reports, evidence, testimony. 90% of court cases are decided by evidence, evaluation of testimony, when you don't have, you know, first-hand witness, the Lacey Peterson case, the O.J. Simpson case. How different they would be if we had first-hand witnesses.
Actually, in the Lacey Peterson case, you have physical evidence, and that's what I'm asking you for. Who did what to whom when? But wait a minute. My question was, just give me your best. We want to convince this astrophysicist that says, you know,
an astrophysicist. Why should I? He is concerned about astrophysics.
What about our listeners? Tell our listeners then, they're the jury tonight. Tell them what is your best case. What's the best evidence?
Pick out one case? Let's take a multiple radar visual sighting down and off the Gulf of Mexico. Got the crew of a military airplane. They see this strange thing, if you will. I'll call it a UFO. What the heck? That's the easiest way. They see this on their radar. They see it visually. Guys on the ground say, you know, what's that up there? We see it on the radar. And it circles around. It does all kinds of things. This lasts for an hour. What am I supposed to do with that? Say these guys are all crazy. No, I can't say that. Look at the best cases involving military pilots. Look at NARCAP. I don't know whether George has had Ted Rowe and Dick Haynes of NARCAP on.
I don't think I have.
National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena. They're headquartered on the West Coast, and they collect reports from pilots, almost all of whom are very wary of being identified because they know what happens to people who I say that they've had a UFO sighting. Nobody's going to fly my airline is sort of the approach. What am I supposed to do with these guys? Say, hey, you're not an astrophysicist. That's silly. In Sky and Telescope, there was an article saying the best witnesses for UFOs would be amateur astronomers. They're familiar with what goes on in the sky. And I say, baloney. I'm in an airplane. I want that pilot to know about things moving around in the sky. I don't care if he knows about a comet going by a few hundred million miles away. I want him to know about things moving under intelligent control. That's what we're talking about here, where we can't control it.
Okay, so Stanton, the answer, if I can summarize your answer here, is that the best evidence is witness testimony by lots of people.
Plus the physical trace cases, the 5,000. Now, I had tests done on soil from Delphos, Kansas, 25 years ago.
And what was in the soil that you couldn't find in some soil elsewhere?
That much higher levels of soluble minerals in the soil that was in a ring.
Soluble minerals, you want to tell me what that is?
Calcium, sodium, all the normal stuff that's in soil.
Calcium, sodium, there's plenty of that in any soil out in my garden.
Now wait a minute, Seth. They ran tests on the affected soil, the soil in the ring, and control samples from nearby. The affected soil would not support plant growth. The normal soil, put seeds, treat the soil samples the same.
That's Stanton.
Seeds grow fine in. We have a higher level of soluble minerals. How do you explain that in a ring 10 feet in diameter, outer diameter?
Well, I could take a carton. All right, I could take a carton of Morton salt outside, make a ring 10 feet in diameter, and nothing would grow in it. And if you did an analysis, you would have soluble salts. You would have it.
Wait a minute. If you look at the specifics of the case, there's no way.
Tell me what they are, Stan.
Could affect the soil down 14 inches in a ring a little over a foot wide, 10 feet in outer diameter, compared to soil that was nearby. You're going to give them a special ray gun to treat that soil?
No, you give them a bucket and you dissolve some water in it and you pour it. It's pretty straightforward.
The soil won't absorb moisture. Glad you mentioned water, Seth. When you compare the two samples, and I use slides of this in my life.
It won't absorb moisture.
The ring soil won't absorb any moisture. The normal soil makes instant mud. Now, this doesn't happen just once. It happens all over the world. There is a consistent picture of people seeing strange craft strange to us anyway, sitting on the ground and then taking off, and after the craft is gone, there are physical effects on the soil. Sometimes there are footprints, sometimes it's dried out. Like I say, down 14 inches, it's a pretty neat trick to do that, especially in a place that gets quite ample rain and on a farm. So there are lots of these cases.
Okay,
There's a whole fat report, half inch thick, if you will.
Wait, hang on there, Stan. So let me summarize where we are now. The best evidence is witness testimony, photos made from great distance. I don't know if you consider that part of the best evidence, and some salty soil samples. Am I right so far?
Well, you've left out the radar visual cases.
Well, wait a minute. The radar
scientific studies that the SETI specialist refused to look at. You've left out all the relevant evidence. Instead, you've got a sort of comic book picture of what flying saucers are all about. Some nut out in the field seeing some crazy thing happening and then running off to the local newspaper, look what I saw. That's not what ufology is about.
It's not what I said either. And in fact, by the way, to say that the SETI specialist refused to look at it, I think is a completely unjustified charge. You don't look at our SETI experiments. Everything you write about
SETI... I look at your SETI stuff. You guys don't... How can you in your book say... How come they haven't landed when they have?
No.
How come
why aren't
they seen on radar when they have been many times?
No, all you look at in our SETI work is when we talk about UFOs. You don't look at our SETI experiments, and yet you blame the SETI experiments, the SETI experimenters, the SETI researchers, for not looking at your UFO evidence. Now, are you checking out...
They make proclamations about the absence of evidence.
And you make proclamations about SETI. I have one right in front of me here. You want me to quote it to you?
Sure.
Okay, it says here... This SETI specialist saying, we'll build some radio telescopes and listen for signals. And undoubtedly, once the signals have gone out far enough, because of course they wouldn't know, they being the aliens, wouldn't know that we're here until they picked up our signals. Well, you all know that Columbus waited to get a smoke signal from the Indians before he set off on his voyages of exploration. Well,
many SETI specialists have said they won't know we're here.
Yeah, exactly. I just said that. I said they won't know we're here, but this is a complete misreading of what SETI does. It sounds like, well, SETI is waiting for our signals to reach putative civilizations and then for them to broadcast in our direction. That's clearly untrue.
No, okay. What it's saying is that SETI specialists don't think they will know we're here until they've picked up our signal.
Which specialists are those?
Well, Lawrence Maxwell Krauss says that.
Who? Maxwell Krauss wasn't with
us. The new Carl Sagan, according to Case Western Reserve University, he wrote...
You don't mean Lawrence Krauss, do you?
What?
You mean Lawrence Krauss?
Yes, Lawrence Krauss at the Case Western Reserve in Cleveland.
Ding, 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 ding. That's round one. Break it up, guys. We'll be back with Stanton Friedman and Seth Shostak in a moment with round two of the Great Debate. And then in the third hour, your phone calls. And also remember now, those of you by your computer, in the third hour, I'll ask you to fast blast me and tell me who you think may have won the debate. This two-round debate, round two, about to begin in just a moment.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter online at www.coasttocoastam.com. Just click through the orange type to the secure server.